Welcome to 500 Words Lessons on Writing. This is Katrina Lee. This podcast explores the triumphs and tragedies of 10 years as a published author. Hey everyone, I think we might be having the nicest day of the month so far here in Elkhart on Brady Street. The purple plum tree is glistening in the sun, and I just stepped out on the porch with some packages, and it is splendid. If you hear some noises in the background that sound like something crashing against the kitchen window, that would be my new friend, the blue cowbird with the brown head, who apparently is so much more stupid than the cardinal and the chickadees and all the other birds that have been coming to my feeder, that he doesn't realize he's dashing his head against the glass against his own reflection. I've caught him puffing himself up to twice his size in the window, and he just looks totally absurd, and I keep hearing these fateful noises. So hopefully you don't join me in hearing those noises, but that's what it is if you do happen to hear it. Thank you, Mary from Arizona. She said, I enjoyed the podcast as I like to multitask when working on projects such as sewing or crocheting. And Sharon from Wisconsin said, thanks for doing these podcasts, Katrina. They've been encouraging. Thank you, Sharon. And Sheila from Illinois said, I've been loving your podcast. The timing couldn't be better for the fact that when you are mostly stuck at home with two littles, an interesting email is always welcome. And being able to listen is just a big bonus. Thank you for the energy you are putting into this. And I'm also excited for your Voices of Survival to start. I was just thinking, after 10 in a row here, am I really starting Voices of Survival? But no, I'm actually quite excited about that as well. And of course, we've done some work on that before, so hopefully it won't be too difficult. Congrats to Marlene Graber of Wisconsin, who won yesterday's giveaway. She describes her spring project as follows. Our annual spring project is to pay our dues, or better yet, our commitment to keeping our 2 miles of Adopt-a-Highway ditches clean. So it took Louie and Russell and me 2 afternoons to fill about 10 trash bags, and now we enjoy our trips into town much more, helping keep our community beautiful. Isn't that the neatest thing? I've known Marlene since I was quite young, and I'm so proud of her and her family for keeping the ditches clean. That's amazing. I didn't know they did that. And now, writing year 8 of 10, 3 reasons to let a project rest. What about these projects that never succeed? And I know I did talk talked with Sharon on Saturday night about this same topic, although that was focused more on how to handle criticism and how to receive criticism. Trust me, the heart memoir I talked about on Saturday is not the only piece of work languishing in my files. I have a hunch that most authors have as many unpublished manuscripts as published ones, maybe not full-length ones, but little things here and there. Why should you let a project go? I went through this recently with the agent who wanted me to write Amish Millionaire. This was about a year ago. He wanted a book about wealthy Amish businessmen and their stories of success and which, what values they employ in their businesses. And Marnell and I have quite a few connections, and so I set about to interview some Amish men and write up a proposal. My cousin Sarah accompanied me to interview a man close to her area. Sarah is an author as well. She writes articles for Christian Light Education's Homeschooling Today periodical and Daughters of Promise magazine. She also writes a blog called Dewdrops of Joy. Check out Sarah's book, Overcoming Inferiority. This inspiring little book is about 4 by 6 inches. It's super cute. It fits in your purse. You could read it in the checkout line or wherever you just have time to pull something out real quick. Sarah recounts her testimony of grappling with inferior feelings and finding freedom in Christ. The link to her book is in my blog. She says on the back of the book, I share my testimony for 2 reasons. First, it is my song of victory to God and thanks for his glorious freedom and healing, as well as a declaration to Satan that I am done believing his lies. Second, I share it because I am convinced this is a much-needed message, especially among youth girls. I have an urgency to offer hope to young women who feel of little worth, inferior, or who think of themselves as failures. In Christ, there is a way to escape from these debilitating feelings. She seemed like the perfect person to take with me to interview a single Amish businessman. This man's log frame construction crew helped to assemble the Ark in Kentucky. He was a perfect person to interview for this project. What could go wrong? In order to place people in the book, I would have to have some proof of their financial status, so I came up with a way to collect information anonymously. It wasn't a bad system, and lest you just blow up laughing that I thought I would ask someone how much money they have and that they would answer, it wasn't a bad system and had worked previously, but this particular man wanted nothing to do with being associated with the word millionaire, and I hadn't even asked him if the title was okay. I admired his values, even though they ruined my plans. And just to recap and confirm my memories of that time, I gave Sarah a call, so let's go to that interview right now. But I was thinking about the Amish Millionaire Project. By the way, thank you again for going along with me, because do you remember all the drama we had with the robins and the...
Oh, it was so funny. I thought this is such an ill-fated interview, because... he was late, and your phone was forgotten.
Forgot my phone, of all things.
So when John went to get the phone, the robins flew in the car, the borrowed car.
Right, and, pooped all over the place. Abigail's car. It was just awful. And that was all before we ever even met the single Amish guy. But all that to say, he was the perfect subject for the project, would you not agree? I mean,
he was excellent.
He told stories well, and you know, was honest, and had you know, done a huge business project.
Yes.
But yeah, I obviously in that interview I didn't mention the title to him, that you know the publisher wants to call this book Amish Millionaire. And I think I had in my head that maybe that would be negotiable, or I don't know, maybe I was just too not being real by not telling him. But looking back, or even shortly thereafter, I felt very confident that he would not be okay with that title.
No, he was so not going to be okay.
No.
When we were going home, do you remember his driver, he had issues with his driver, so we took him back to his next place.
Right.
And along the way, you were kind of gently suggesting that he could anonymously give specific numbers,
right.
And he was not okay with that.
Yes.
And so I thought this is not going to work.
I just thought, you know, even just sort of talking about the finances was almost out. Like even just, yeah, he did not want to even... be in that conversation, it almost seemed like.
Right. I just really thought that he had this deep humility.
Mm-hmm.
One of his reasons was, I don't want to put those numbers out there because my fellow Amishmen looking in at me, it could change the way they view me. It either could make them jealous, or it could make them respond to him in different ways if they know his numbers. And so just for the sake of other people, he was just not willing to go there.
That's a good point, because I do remember him saying something like that. And yeah, and I think even just other clues that we got in the earlier conversation would have kind of indicated that just his humility. And well, okay, also, don't you remember, I think there were a few cases where he demonstrated his just utter integrity earlier in the conversation, like extreme to where, you know, things that, for example, I think he said he doesn't even like to read fiction because he doesn't feel that it's true. Do you remember that?
Yeah. He said that he reads his Bible and beyond that, he doesn't find value in fiction.
Right. And I think he said he reads a few like helpful, you know, industry magazines and things like that. But basically, I think if there was something that he didn't feel was right, it was just not negotiable.
That's right.
Which I admired.
Yep.
You know,
yes,
I mean,
I did too.
It might be a different position than what some of the rest of us would take, but so there wasn't going to be any talking him into anything.
No. The other thing was he tithes his time as well as his money to the Lord.
I forgot about that.
which I thought was excellent. It just is another example of his integrity and where he stands with God.
Now, how did he describe that? How did he say he tithes his time? Do you remember the specifics at all? Was it something about, did he count Sunday?
He counts Sunday. He said, if you give one day to the Lord, you know, you spend morning in church and then often in the evening. I forget, there was something in the evening. So
he tithes his time, that's right.
Yes. I don't remember how he all keeps track of that, but he definitely tries to do that each week.
Which is such a good point. Much easier to do when you're in quarantine, but...
well, maybe.
Well, right. Even then, it's maybe not easy, but certainly a good thing to think about getting out of quarantine, that's for sure. So, yeah, I just wanted to review those... that situation with you, and I'm just curious, have you ever had a project that you decided not to do for any reason? Or
I do have one kind of postponed, because when I moved to Ghana, I thought this is a writer's paradise. There's so many stories and this is wonderful. But it wasn't there very long until I was really cautioned against sharing anything that could make a Ghanaian feel exploited or lesser than an American. And sometimes it comes across, I think it might be a funny story, but to them it might be offensive. So I shelved some projects. I feel like I'm still trying to find my way through some of that. But I feel like it's better to shelve a sensational story even to protect the honor of others.
So that category would actually be very similar to the Amish Millionaire project.
Right.
I mean, basically where you feel like you can't go through it for the, go through with it for the sake of the person that it's about.
Yeah. Right. We are not our own. Romans talks about not pleasing ourselves, but living to please each other. And I feel like that's what Eli was talking about in this, the whole project. And also even with the stories in Ghana. Our lives are so intertwined with other people that I feel like we have to be careful on how much we even share of our own story when it can affect others.
And where's the, I mean, do you have any thoughts on where the balance is with that? Because there's also this thing of living in fear and, you know, not wanting to offend anyone with our writing. And I... I heard one time, I forget who said this, but I think they said that you always offend someone with every book you write.
There's probably truth in that, but I think if we check our, you know, why are we writing the book?
The motivation.
In your case with the, with your case with the Amish Millionaire, I think is a classic example. It would have been an incredible break for you. Wonderful story, but beyond that, what was the value going to be of the story? And in my case, it's like, well, it's not that I can't, it's not that the story I wanted to share about Ghana was going to make that huge of a difference.
And, you know, maybe in both of these cases, there could come a time or a way of telling these stories that, that could be valuable, you know. I felt like I talked to really great people in the interviews that, that I did for that book, and maybe there will be a case where they'll be valuable, you know. It's hard to say.
I'm still hoping to write the story of us being in Ghana and do it carefully in a way that doesn't offend anyone, but like you say, that might be impossible to do.
Well, and with that one, I feel like maybe if your audience is definitely Americans, it might be a little... or it might be possible to, more possible to do it.
It is, but the world's getting smaller all the time, so you can't neck it down to only Americans.
True, everyone has access to the, you know, the internet and, and that kind of thing. But, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time, and I just, I thought about you. I'm like, you were right there when that all happened, and I think if, there's a, if I have any question that I was wrong... Along. you can, or that I, if I was right or not, you can confirm that one way or the other. So
I enjoyed the experience. It was a new one for me to eat crab legs house with an Amish bachelor,
Yes.
someone that was so comfortable in a restaurant like that. So I didn't have any pressure, so I just sat there and enjoyed my food and let you at it.
Actually, yeah, I think I kind of lost my appetite, which is a very rare occurrence for me, unfortunately, and didn't even really get to enjoy this free seafood. Oh, but you know, he was the nicest guy. That reminds me. I mean, just very generous, and yeah,
yes.
Bought us both dinner, and wow, so a good
yes.
experience, even if even if it's not going anywhere right now. So thanks for going with me, Sarah, Robbins and all. So I next called Emily Smucker from the other side of the country. Emily had also been asked to write the book Amish Millionaire, and somehow we made that connection. Emily writes a blog called The Girl in the Red Rubber Boots at emilysmucker.com. I'm sure many of you have read her work. Her book, My True Story of Chronic Illness and Missing Out on Life, came out in 2009. I also have that in front of me, and I'll just read you a few lines from the back. Plagued with some sort of cold or fever or bizarre aches and pains for much of her life, Emily thought the dizziness and stomach aches at the start of her senior year were just another bout of Emily flu. But when they didn't go away, she knew something was seriously wrong. Eventually diagnosed with the rare and incurable West Nile virus, Emily watched her senior year and the future she had planned for go up in smoke. She and her sister have recently started a podcast, Quarantined with Jenny and Emily. Now, Emily is writing a book about her year spent last year moving from one Mennonite community to the next. She lived in different places around the country just to kind of experience life there. I remember reading about it as she was blogging. I thought that was just the coolest thing to do. And so she's working on a book about that experience, and this book is scheduled to release on September 16th. 2020. So she's working on that right now. She's also editing a book on writing and publishing for her mom, Dorcas Smucker, an avid blogger and writer, as you probably know. She recently wrote an article for Daughters of Promise magazine and is slated for a monthly column on the Revolution website, which encourages teens to rebel against low expectations. So I gave her a call because I thought when we had talked last about Amish Millionaire that her angle was just a little bit different from mine and would be instructive, and it was. So let's go to that interview now.
I don't know. I just always take on these little projects, and it kind of distracts me from the big project, and I'm like, no, I need to get back onto the big project.
Well, the funny thing is I'm doing a series of 10 posts and podcasts right now to review the last 10 years of my writing. So I've talked to a couple different people, and it seems like everybody has this, you know, a few official things that they're doing, and then this kind of halo of other things scattered around them that they're kind of, you know, maybe someday or, you know, just for fun or, yeah, it's just
yeah.
funny how creative people somehow, you have so many ideas going through your head that
yes,
you
yes.
never have enough time to do them all. So sometimes you start
yes.
some and don't finish them. Or
mm-hmm.
And yeah, speaking of which, that is what I wanted to talk about today. How do you know when to let a project go? And specifically, I'm in this post and podcast talking about the book Amish Millionaire. And I know
mm-hmm.
that before the agent came to, you know, and asked me about doing that project, you had been in contact with him about the same one.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about that. Like, what was part of your decision making to not do that project?
Well, I think it's easier to take on little projects when you're unsure if it's something you're passionate about than it is to take on large
true.
Projects when you're unsure if it's something you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of what it came down to in the end. Like, yes, it was something that would probably make money, and I did need money.
Mm-hmm.
But
very good point, yeah.
But it was a book length project, and I'd written a short book about my own life, you know, when I was a teenager. I just didn't know if I was up to this book length project when it wasn't something I was passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's ultimately what it came down to for me, like writing about this year of travel. Again, it's my own story, and so it's something I'm passionate about, and so If I run into roadblocks or like feel like I don't know what I'm doing or whatever, I guess I have that passion behind it to power me through. And I just did not have that passion behind it when it came to the Amish Millionaire book.
And I like how you point out there that the decision shouldn't necessarily rest with how much money you're going to make or not, although that is an important. I mean, obviously, as writers, that is something to consider, because I felt the same way about Amish Millionaire. It would have been a kind of a different opportunity, or like a, you know, a new field. And so in that way, it was attractive. I mean, kind of, I did actually start interviewing some people and even some great, great contacts. But in the end, I just couldn't do it just because I didn't think they would want that title. They wouldn't want to be in a book with that title on it.
Yeah, there have been a couple. There have been some projects also that I had to let go just because, you know, the subject matter or the title or just something about it just didn't quite sit right with me, or I thought there might be a group of people that would be uncomfortable with it, or like there's just different things like that. I feel like if it kind of gives you that, oh my, is this gonna be okay sort of feeling, that maybe it's not something you should be pursuing.
Right. Yeah. And well, I just talked with my cousin who had gone with me to one of the interviews of the Amish. And we were talking, and maybe you have some thoughts on this, but how do you balance that? I've heard an author say, and I don't remember where or when, but I believe she said, it might have been Anne Lamott, actually. She offends at least one person with every book she writes. and that it's basically impossible to get away from doing that completely, and that you can't live out of fear that you're going to offend someone. So how do we balance that with...
Well, I think the important thing is, like, if you're telling someone's story, like, if you're telling the story from a culture that's not your own, you really, really, really have to be careful about not offending that culture. Like, if you're telling your own story, and, like, your own story offends people, well, that's your story. It's, like, almost your right, right? But if you're using someone else's story, because, like, the other... instance I had been thinking of was someone who had been a missionary, and so in that case it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just their culture and their story, it was also the culture that was around them. And so that was, I just feel like it was someone else's culture,
right,
that you need to handle that with care, because like it belongs to them in a sense, you know. But when it comes to just, I feel like when it comes to smaller projects, I'm a lot more willing to experiment, to give it a try. I did a lot of marketing writing for a while where I was writing about, you know, three car garages and gazebos and pavilions and all these, you know, structures that Mennonites sell. To try to get Google hits. And it was not something I was passionate about. I was doing it, you know, for the money.
That's a job, basically.
We have to have money sometimes. And it was the kind of thing I was willing to try it, but it really, in the end, was not a good fit for me. But since it was small projects, it was easier to just let that go. You know, something like Amish Millionaire, once you're in it, it's like you don't get the money until, you know, the end of the process.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, that's a good point that I hadn't thought of either, is that the size of the project can make a difference in whether to let something set. Have you ever resurrected something kind of from the longer ago and given it another shot, or do you just...
You know, it's interesting. Well, I don't know if I should say this because I don't know if they'll accept it for publication or not. But there's a Mennonite, like, literary sort of magazine that's starting called The Leaf Magazine.
Is that the one that's associated with the curator?
Yes, it's associated with the curator, yeah. They emailed me asking if I had any fiction I wanted to submit. And I was like... You know, I'm doing all these projects. I don't have time to start a story.
Right.
But then I remembered, you know, I wrote fiction in college for my classes. And so I pulled up one of those stories, went through, made a couple edits, and submitted it. And the editor seemed like he liked it. But I don't know if I should say that because they haven't officially
Right.
accepted it,
Well, that's a
you
good
know.
example though, because I think it is really handy and totally appropriate to be able to use one project a few different ways. You know, even if you didn't expect it to be written for that particular use at the beginning. So
And I've
that's a good
actually
idea.
found I started a Patreon, and I post there just I originally started it as kind of like if I have a more controversial idea that I want to talk about, but I don't just want it to be able to go viral or whatever, I
Yes,
can put it
I
on
feel your
there, and you know, my
pain.
patrons can read it. And it ended up being this outlet for all kinds of random things I'd written. I mean, I was even thinking, you know, I could put some of my college fiction on there. I could put, you know, sometimes I just write up these essays about really personal stuff because it's just what I'm thinking of, and I would never put it on my blog, but I've put some of that stuff on my Patreon. And so that's been a fun, outlet for some of this random stuff I've collected, written over the years.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time for this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're
And I
welcome.
know
It was a fun little chat.
you've got a lot going on. So,
Yeah, but sometimes I want an excuse to avoid
Yeah.
it.
I know that feeling too. So thank you for those thoughts, Emily. So basically, we've covered three reasons you might not want to work on a project. One, if you don't feel you can, or if you feel you have to go against your conscience to do it. Secondly, if it simply doesn't excite you enough to keep you going through the tough times which come in any project. And thirdly, if you feel you will offend somebody else's culture by doing it. And of course, that does relate to the first point about going against your conscience, which is how I felt as well. Remember, the most important quality of a writer or a creative is probably patience. It's very crucial to develop the muscle of always trying again and not being discouraged. Just because something is not right for the moment doesn't mean it won't ever be right. Hey, please let me know if there are any problems with any of the orders I've sent your way. If there's a damage or if your order does not arrive, email me, Katrina@500-words.com. As you know, I'm not too experienced with this whole online shop and shipping thing yet. So, also, we have had mail stolen off of our porch in the past. And so, if something simply doesn't show up, please let me know. I think I've kept a good eye on the outgoing mail, but still, let me know if there are any problems. Today, since I'm not talking about a specific book of mine, I did mention Sarah and Emily have both published a book, and those links are on my blog. I'm also featuring the $3 instant download collection that I've developed for the grand opening. These downloads consist of popular blogs on three topics I've written about: hospital stories, mental health, and humorous and crazy things I've done. And keep in mind, you do get 10% off of these as well with the code 10 years. You will automatically get entered into the $100 cash prize. And there's no shipping. You just download it straight onto your computer. You can print them off if you want. On the blog here at katrinahooverlee.com, I've actually inserted the tables of contents for those three downloads so you can see what is all in there. Tomorrow's a big day. I'll be speaking with Rachel Lofgren. It's day 9 of 10. Rachel is a fellow TGS author. She's an author of 8 books in the last 10 years, very similar to me, one more actually. On the topic, we will be talking tomorrow on the topic of digging characters out of history and dusting them off so that they are presentable. I have one more trivia for you tomorrow, which will be from Captain Garrison. Also, tomorrow is the day where you can post on a comment on the blog to be entered into the second $100 cash prize drawing. If you have read or purchased the book, Captain Garrison, you're eligible to enter this additional drawing. So I hope you come back tomorrow. Thank you for listening to another lesson on writing.